Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for joining in on a very special roundtable discussion here with your host, Dan Palazuelos, and our guest, Tiffany Trevino, who is a fantastic member of Partners in Health US, but brings to this work a wealth of experience and knowledge around community health, because she herself was once a community health worker in California. You know, the United States right now, especially post-COVID, post-George Floyd, in this new world where we're trying to rebuild the country better, community health workers and community health has been launched into the spotlight as a major part of the way to move forward. At the same time, there still remains important questions about how to do that well. And one of the big premises of this podcast is let's listen to community health workers themselves. It's within their voices and their experiences that real knowledge can come forward. So, Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you introduce yourself a little?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Dan. It's a privilege and a pleasure, really. My name is Tiffany Trevino, and I work for Partners in Health on the US site.
Thank you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and how that experience led you into the work of community health?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Texas. Specifically, I grew up in South Texas, and anybody who's familiar with South Texas knows that it's kind of a different world down there. My little town was Kingsville, which is on the Gulf Coast and maybe like an hour and a half or 2 hours from the border. People might not be familiar, but it's probably a 75% Hispanic community down there, and lots of industry with the oil field and things like that. So that's where I grew up. My family on my mom's side is all from down there as well. And on my dad's side, they're actually from Mexico, but they moved over to the US when he was younger. And so that's a little bit about where I came from. I went to school at A&M Kingsville, which is really well known to be supportive of low-income students, first-generation students, and is a primarily Hispanic-serving institute. I graduated in 2017 with a Bachelor's of Science in Biomedical Sciences and my minor of International Studies.
Well, fantastic. So you have incredible higher education. You have lived experience in Texas. When did you start working in community health?
Well, I didn't start actually working in community health until 2019. So I guess I should give some more backstory. So I did my MPH in New Zealand at the University of Otago. Rather, I should say I started it, and I am waiting to finish the last little segment of a thesis. But unfortunately, due to COVID, I have been essentially locked out of the country, as so many people have been from New Zealand. So yeah, it's kind of a mess, that whole situation. But still, I do have my postgraduate diploma of public health, which is basically all the coursework of a master's minus the written thesis portion. So from there is really when I started learning about what community health means. I didn't grow up around any medical field people, nothing whatsoever. So it's not like this was something that I was enriched with when I was younger. Even in university, undergrad, I mean, I knew more or less what community health was. But if you told me specifically, like, you know, ACHW does, you know, this or that, I would not have known. I was pretty sciencey. Undergrad, I have like published research in some like neuropharmacological medications and stuff like that. Like, then it was kind of after a trip to New Zealand when I was introduced to, like, we had like a study abroad, and part, like a subsection of that was like on public health and like kind of talking about like, you know, impacts of like climate change. And it was like kind of sociopolitical, and that kind of opened the door for me. And I was like, wow, this is actually a really cool topic. And then I learned that New Zealand has an excellent program for public health with a focus on Indigenous health, specifically Maori health. And that is Indigenous health, and like, is something that I really, really find personally fascinating. And I just love Indigenous cultures. And as an Indigenous person myself, I just have a real passion for it. So I decided to really focus on that in my studies. And throughout that, like within that, the postgraduate public health option, you can pick like different subtopics, and I decided to choose health promotion. And that's kind of where I learned about, you know, the real power of community-led and community-centered health interventions. And that to me kind of opened the door to, like, I remember the idea of like community-centered and community-led, community-focused, like those three, like autonomy, like those words, like just like ruminated in my head. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, it makes sense that you should have programs by the people, for the people. Why do you have some random people from other places coming in and trying to tell these people what to do, you know? So yeah, so that was kind of my little like epiphany moment in my first like semester of undergrad, I mean, a postgrad, excuse me. So from there, I kind of took it and I ran with it. And I was like, this is what I want to write on. And of course, since from then till now, so much of that has changed. One, with my actual experience as a CHW. And two, I think just post-COVID, there's been a lot of acknowledgement on the role of CHWs and the role of community health in general. Like, people who were not even in the public health field, you know, 3 years ago wouldn't even know what public health is. And I can say this with confidence because my own parents didn't know what that was.
Right.
You're like, oh, you're going to study public health. Okay. I thought you were going to be a doctor kind of thing. And I'm like, well, it's still healthcare. Like, in 2019, I realized I was not going to be able to return to New Zealand. At that point, it was for a visa issue. Mm. I had to stay home and help care for my granddad through the end of his life. And I missed like the cutoff period for me to return. So I had to renew it, and it was just kind of messy. But in that meantime, I moved to California and I realized that I needed to do something. So I actually started with a job at Starbucks because I was like, oh, you know, like I'm not going to be here very long term. So I want something that's going to be fun. It's going to be a skill. It's going to be, you know, just something enriching while I'm here. And this is where I'm at in my life right now. And I need to like accept that. So yeah. I did that. March 2020 came around, and we know what happened in March 2020. The pandemic officially kicked off, I guess you can say. And we went into lockdown. New Zealand shut their borders and I got stuck out of the country. So I had one class to finish, and I fortunately was able to finish it virtually. But then I realized I need to do something with this degree. Like, I shouldn't just work at Starbucks. We're in a global crisis, and there's some kind of value that I can add in healthcare. So I started, you know, looking for jobs online, and I came across one. It was a patient care coordinator. I had no idea really what the whole, you know, realm of like care coordination, CHW, like actually entailed. I knew like larger picture, you know, things. So I ended up applying, and I obviously got hired, and I was then started working for a large FQHC in the East Bay of San Francisco Bay Area. And if anybody knows the East Bay, they probably know that, you know, their system in Alameda County for like community health care and just CHWs in general is admirable, phenomenal, like just out of this world, amazing, very comprehensive. So I jumped right into that role, and I started training to be a CHW, and that was that. And I loved that job. It was amazing.
Wow. And, you know, you've said so many incredible things about how we center knowledge and expertise, about how health systems can be more respectful and better integrate with the knowledge and expertise in communities. Community complexity, you know, community health workers as experts of community complexity. A lot of times, you know, I get called upon as a consultant for community health work. And I know that everything I say, I just learned from my community health colleagues. I have to be very humble. And I often will say this straight out, that I am sort of a bridge between these worlds. And between the knowledge that our community health colleagues get through being on-site natural caregivers, you're talking about taking care of a family member, is a very common experience of community health workers, I've heard. That natural caregiver who then, through whatever process, epiphany or otherwise, which your epiphany sounds incredible, I could visualize it happening, the light bulb going off, the light, you know, radiating out. But then now lending those skills and experiences to the formal field of community health work. And so Tell me a little bit about what the day in the life of you as a community health worker looked like.
Yeah, I can walk you through my actual day. I mean, it was, for context, it was kind of a weird time because of COVID. You know, patients weren't allowed just freely in the clinics like they had been previously. And things got a lot more strict in terms of our one-on-one sessions and face-to-face sessions. We were not allowed to do home visits. So it was kind of a non-traditional experience, I would say, just because of that. But essentially, I would go into work, and my commute was about 20 minutes. So I would just, you know, play some good music and deal with the 880 traffic in San Francisco. Or not San Francisco. In the Bay Area, that's like really crazy. If anybody's listening and well aware, they will know exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
You know, the clinic that I worked at was in East Oakland. So once I would get there, there was always people outside and, you know, like the neighborhood, you know, people. And I would just, you know, say hello, go inside. And the first thing that I would do is I would start going through my messages on Epic from the providers. So actually, we had a morning huddle, and we would do that, just kind of get an idea of where we stood with COVID and like objectives for the clinic and stuff. And then I would go through these messages. And like the largest bulk of my work was outreach calls, since I couldn't have one-on-ones as much in the beginning. And just reaching out to these patients and seeing, you know, what they needed based on the provider's recommendations, or if I was kind of given a little bit of like autonomy to go through and say, okay, like, you know, we can do this as a, you know, I guess a care idea. Like, so mm-hmm. Specifically, there was a social determinants of health screening that we would do. And from there, it was kind of my job to close gaps in that care by issuing referrals or connecting people with these services. And like health navigation is obviously a big part of that. So just helping people become independent enough and confident and comfortable enough with the systems that existed. And then I think that was like the bulk of my job. The other part of my job kind of developed a little bit later. I think that my supervisor, who was absolutely amazing and phenomenal and just exactly what a CHW supervisor should be, I think she realized that I had a lot to offer and a lot of education. I mean, mind you, I was pretty much finished with my MPH. I mean, besides that obvious little side part, you know, but, you know, I had like a bigger educational vision of how these programs work and like how the work that I'm doing is like actually having like bigger change. It's not just like putting numbers in the Excel sheet so we can count our metrics. Like, no, this is like, you know, the work that we're doing is actually closing gaps and ending cycles and things like that. So
on a population level.
Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of the providers that I worked with, in my personal experience, all of them except for like two, maybe three of them, I felt like they always looked at us, like the CHWs or the people who were not other providers, as like, you guys are doing the work that we don't have time to do. You know, that's how I always felt. And that's not true for everybody, because there was two providers in particular that I was just super close with. And I think that they realized that like, oh, this girl is like, you know, like she's really educated and like she knows her stuff and this is just where she's been put, but she's so perfect for this position. And it felt really nice to hear that. And then as I opened up and I, you know, started telling a little bit about like my life story and stuff like that, and they could see like how and why all of it kind of applied to be so perfect for this position. So,
wow. And so, yeah. And again, going back to that question of how we center different ways of knowing and different expertise and knowledge base, you know, I'm glad that your incredible public health experience in New Zealand opened up doors for you. But it's also unfortunate that they couldn't see that your experience growing up in Texas brought something that allowed you to bring to the table something that wasn't just about time. That was something about an approach or a presence. And so I don't know, you know, could you maybe relate to a story that where your input was not, you know, you were catching up on the tasks that no one had time for, but that you really felt like your life experience and life approach actually allowed you to unlock something that was unique?
Yeah, I think that it's not like a one single experience, but in multiple experiences and working with some of my clients and my patients, you know, they would explain how, oh, you know, this doctor, you know, said I needed to do this, but I don't understand. And I was scared to ask them, or, you know, this doctor said this, this and that, but they don't get it, or I don't feel comfortable with them. And so I feel like I was at a really nice position to be able to get the proper information that I needed from a provider, from a doctor, and relay it to the patient and kind of like bridge that trust there, like for them to understand that like this is what the goal is, and you know, like this is what we really want for you, like we're not just telling you this. So like there was multiple incidences in that sense that happened. And a lot of, specifically like a lot of our like Latino patients, obviously they really connected with me, and so many people would say like, you just make me feel comfortable, like I like you're just so special, like things like that. And like hearing that just really made me like my heart warm. And I would just think of like my grandparents, like on my dad's side specifically, and I guess even my mom's side, but you know, if they were the ones receiving this healthcare, like they wouldn't know what the heck is going on, you know? Like they need somebody to help kind of make it clear for them, and just, you know, and I was always keeping that at the forefront of like, if this was my grandpa or this was my abuelo, like, you know, what would I need to do for this? And the same kind of applied for some of my Black and African American patients as well, even though I'm not Black or African American, but just we were able to relate in different ways with like our just different life experiences and such. And just creating this like atmosphere of like empathy and understanding and like openness. It was like me opening the door and like them being able to walk in whenever they wanted. Like, and there was one quote that I remember, and I wrote it down from one of my trainings, and it was like really eye-opening because I'm such an empathetic person. I feel like I would want things for my patients more than they would want it themselves. And it was, and if you're familiar with like trauma-informed care and stuff, like one of the things is like you have to like protect yourself from like residual trauma. And so just kind of learning how to balance all of that. And I ended up developing like this really healthy way to connect with my patients and still protect myself, but use my unique story and like my unique thing, like whatever I have to offer to get that person to be in the place that I would hope that they wanted to be for themselves, you know.
Do any stories come to mind, you know, times where, you know, of course, without too many identifying characteristics, but, you know, someone who it was a really tough case, no one could get through. And then you, as you said, opened up the door so that new opportunities, new possibilities could happen.
Yeah, I can think of a couple. There was one very sweet little lady, and I can't remember too much about her situation, but we would do like a food pharmacy. And when that had to end because of COVID, I like, just the stories that she would say, and like she was so humble and so reluctant to ask for help and support. And fortunately, during her check-in for her blood pressure, our doctor, you know, kind of did a little bit of like screening and asked like, you know, how are you on food? Like, are you okay with the pandemic? And she's like, oh, well, you know, I'm not gonna lie, like I don't really have anybody to get me food, so some days like I don't eat. I was like, oh my gosh. So of course, like we would help connect her with food resources. And I remember when we did have our first food pharmacy back open after COVID, she was there, and like it was just so nice to see her, and she was so humble and so loving. But I don't know, she was so scared to ask for help. And like that's what these programs are here for. Like they're here to help you. Like if you don't use the programs, and they're not, this is just going to be money wasted. I mean, so that was one. Another one, this patient was just, she had a special place in my heart, and she had a very traumatic experience, multiple traumatic experiences that she very bravely opened up and talked to me about. Unfortunately, as a result, she suffered from substance abuse and, you know, experienced some difficulties with her mental health. But I was able to help connect her with some behavioral health services. So that was one really big deal, because this patient was on a list that of patients that like needed a little bit of extra support, and like nobody had really been able to like get through to her. Yeah, so that was a really nice one. And then of course I have like a few of like the sadder stories. Like,
sometimes those are illustrative. I mean, if you're comfortable talking about challenge, because I think it might also, you know, open up a better understanding of what we still have left to do.
Right. Yeah, I feel like this is just getting so, like, you know, of like my experience without being like contributive to like the larger scheme of things. But this patient of mine in particular, and this is where that whole you can't want it more than the patient wants it for themselves. I had just seen him the day before, and we were, you know, discussing, you know, his suffering of substance abuse and, you know, making promises, I'm going to change. And I need a change. You know, my life is at risk. And I'm like, yes, you know, like, but you have to really want it. And like, so long as you want it, I'm here to help you. I'm here to support you. And unfortunately the next day, they had a stroke and, I was so heartbroken because I was like, we were right there, like just about to hit that like breakthrough point that some people have. And like, for some people, like it's as simple as getting them connected and then they can do the rest themselves. And like, that's kind of the whole point, right? It's like, you want to establish independence. You don't want to have to hold people's hand the whole time, because the whole point is like, we want people to be able to do things for themselves in a healthy way, of course. Yeah, that was one of my more sad stories.
Wow. It was just within arm's reach. And just as you were about to get there, it kind of slipped away.
Right. And I think that this is kind of a really important point, is that, you know, he made a comment that like, we need more people like you in healthcare. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, like why? He's like, because he's like, you care, like you will make the effort. You have been calling me, you have been on me about it. And like, I just feel like if there was more people like you, this could have happened sooner.
Wow.
Wow. And it just was, I guess, I don't know. I get really like upset thinking about it, but hearing that, it's like, yeah, you're right. Like, there should be more people like me. And then I, you know, why aren't there more people like me? And of course it goes back to like funding and all these really complicated things that I am not very well versed in, but it also has to deal with the fact that a lot of people and a lot of providers specifically don't see CHWs as like as important as they should be seen, you know, on care teams. Yeah. That's obviously not true for all providers, but there are many. Like I said, they kind of would see us as like the lowest, you know, bottom feeders, just doing the closing the straggling bits, you know, kind of that mentality. When in reality, like, we were the ones who were doing a lot of the work that the doctors couldn't achieve, even if they wanted to. I mean, you know, health goes beyond just clinical health. I mean, this addressing of the social determinants of health is really large, and especially in the Bay Area, where so much of the population is vulnerable and is at risk and is just, you know, really struggling. Because it's, I mean, we know the cost of living in the Bay Area, and that in itself is astronomically high, and just, you know, histories and cycles of generational and historical traumas is just, all of that combined just is like for the perfect mesh of people really just needing that extra bit of help. So,
and it all ends up on the community health worker, and, you know, you're positioned at the bottom of the pyramid, but yet arguably you are dealing with the things that the entire pyramid, the entire other enterprise couldn't even begin to scratch. And then actually opening up doors, as you said. So then the question, I think it's a really important question. And I think that your experience on an individual level actually has really important resonance with the future of not just community health, but American healthcare in general. I myself am a practicing physician, but in some ways, I wish I was a community health worker, because I wish I could have that position and time and positionality to really connect the way you're describing with the patients that I serve. And so I would say, at least at minimum, as a physician, what advice would you give me and other physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners, about how to work with community health workers so that we don't undermine the incredible things that they bring to the table?
A few things. First of all, include them on your care teams. And I know this is very dependent on the type of health system that you're working within, but that inclusion on a care team automatically puts the CHW in a position to feel like, and to feel and to be, you know, autonomous in a sense that they're able to connect with the patient without needing a referral or without needing to wait for the, you know, the proper protocol, and to just kind of jump in. That's the first thing. The second thing is it kind of revolves around this like elitism of a lot of physicians, and of course, not all of them, but many providers in general. They feel like CHWs are the bottom feeders. You guys don't have to really have, you know, that high level of education. And as long as you're from the community, like, you know, that kind of like really dangerous thinking without seeing the value that they actually have. I think that another layer to that is physicians might not be educated in public health. I was surprised to learn about, you know, I just kind of assumed like, oh, you went to medical school, like, you know, you also learned about public health. And although it's like, from what I've been told, it's learned as like a topic. It's not like actually studied into like connecting and drawing a lot of the lines together for how everything kind of blends in, specifically with like the social determinants of health and stuff. Like obviously physicians will know about that, but I don't think they realize like that CHWs specifically are capable of like closing so many of those gaps that like them, they'll never be able to do just because of their position and this like, you know, historical, you know, mistrust or fear, you know, of just the system in general, the health system in general. Yeah. You know, not even that individual physician, but I think that those things are really important. Yeah. Yeah.
And yet will benefit the physician because, you know, I think every physician, every frontline provider wants to see the person in front of them get better. And they want to see the community that they're working within be healthier. And, you know, if we could really position community health as a big part of that solution, I think that will go, and what I'm hearing and what you're saying is that will go a long way towards that end. Similarly, you know, what's so interesting is that the community health worker is so, especially the work that you did, was so unique because you could very nimbly toggle between understanding what was going on with the individual in front of you, but then at the same time, connecting it back to this population health level understanding. And that might be particularly acute with you because you have so much public health training. But I think that that ability to understand the micro within the macro is really unique. And so this a little bit mirrors your own career trajectory, where you went to being a frontline community health worker to now working with Partners in Health US, which was, you know, Partners in Health is a non-governmental organization that works in over 10 different countries, and during the COVID pandemic, opened up operations in response to the tremendous need to do contact tracing, follow-up, advocacy around different elements of therapeutics and vaccines and the like. And so you joined the PIH team. And so tell me a little bit about what led you to transition over to working with us, and then also what that transition has been like.
Yeah. Well, I ended up having to leave California due to an opportunity. And when opportunity knocks, I opened the door. So we relocated to the East Coast. And this is where I am at now. And it was actually, I had started seeing ads for PIH. And I was like, oh, that seems like a really cool organization, you know? And then when I started looking for jobs through, it was actually through Public Health Jobs Now, I think it's the website. And that's how I saw this position as a learning and impact team associate. So I went for it, and I'm very thankful to have gotten the position. And here I am now. That's honestly as simple as it is for how I ended up with PIH.
Well, the accident of history became our benefit, because I've seen firsthand all so much that you've brought to the table. So now you're with PIH, you know, kind of positioned across the United States, working anywhere from Immokalee to North Carolina to Chicago to multiple different project sites. You're thinking, and it's now probably again on the macro level. What do you think are some of the main insights that you're bringing to those conversations based on your work as a frontline provider? And, you know, I ask you this not as wearing my PIH hat, you know, because I know right after this, you and I are going to have that conversation of, you know, specifically programmatically, what do we do? But for our listeners, you know, that are now themselves perhaps thinking of the same thing, either being a CHW that wants to make a transition to larger policy consulting and accompaniment support work for health systems, but then also for the policymakers and other groups themselves.
Mm-hmm. I think the large part of it is, and this is how I understood the question. It's like understanding that people have more to offer than just what's on their resume.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I would explain it is like, your experience working as a CHW is so invaluable when it comes to actually looking at like the bigger, like you said, macro, like more theory, you know, strategy based pieces. Because you can study the work as much as you want, like in a classroom setting, in an academia, you know, style. But there's nothing that can ever compare to actual experience working in that field. And like the work that CHWs do is just so complex in and of itself. It's like you have these like credentialings and trainings and like the actual work with your clients. And you have like working with other CHWs and other like, you know, think tanks and other within that community. All of that stuff is just so invaluable to hear valuable towards the larger like scheme of things.
You know, that's, I think it's such a beautiful sentiment. And, you know, I would say that what I've seen community health workers do so effectively is not just being given a task that no one has time to do. For example, apply this social determinants questionnaire and find out if they don't have rides, housing, or food, and then give them the phone number for the housing, transportation, or food bank. You could say very superficially that that's what it is, and therefore you don't need a lot of formal education. I haven't seen that. What I've seen instead is that there's a client who has the full complexity of their lives, right? The intricacies of the ups and downs, plus all the baggage and the history that you're describing, and then creates a very sort of interesting and creative way to talk to that person, to connect with them, to connect with their families, to sort of reposition their understanding within a new trajectory, you know, sort of heading out of the you know, what some people call the culturation to scarcity, the rut that they're in. What you said it beautifully, the person, you can't want it more than your patient wants it. But yet the community health worker helps the client sort of reframe their whole mindset. And what I'm really excited about, what I'm hearing in your answer, is that same sort of nimble, creative way of seeing the world could actually have important policy implications. Because the simple truth is that the standard, same old, it's kind of not working, mm-hmm. right? I think people can look around and say, yeah, we're hitting walls, big time walls. And even just the example of not just the IQ of I know all the policy points, but the EQ that you've demonstrated so beautifully, you know, the caring, what your client said right before, you know, he unfortunately had a clinical downturn, is that itself is a wisdom that doesn't go on the CV. You know, I know I work in the hiring and recruiting, and a lot of times the CV, the interview, everything, it's all, you know, just useless. It's not until you see the person in action that you go, wow, this is something special. This is something special. And I would say for physicians, I maybe get a 50-50, right? Where I say their CV looks great and I see them in action and I'm like, okay, kind of standard flow. Community health workers, I'm 80%, 90%, 95% where, you know, I just see and I think, wow. And then on top of that, I also say, why do we have community health workers only for people who are vulnerable and marginalized? I want a community health worker Like, I got stuff in my life that's complex and intense, you know, with my kids, when my child was just born, with, you know, how do I integrate, you know, all the feelings that come out of suddenly being locked in the house around COVID, right? Imagine if one of my peers with wisdom and natural caregiver could come and take care of me a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, you know, what are you most excited about for the future of community health in the United States?
I am most excited that it's even being recognized as something that's useful and necessary. And I'm just reflecting on everything you just said. You just articulated what I'm like wanting to say, you know, especially about like the CV stuff. It's like, yeah, like there are skills that can't be listed. So it really excites me to see this scope of work being more domestically implicated. I think, mm-hmm. I mean, really, truly after COVID, and I'm just speaking from my experience, the need for community health workers, or, you know, the community health workforce, however you want to define it, has really been proven throughout this pandemic, specifically in terms of like vaccination and contact tracing, and more than just like the data side of contact tracing, the follow through with the care resource navigation, and, you know, all these like different aspects of this. In my opinion, all of that is included within the larger community health workforce, you know.
Yeah.
This is something that I think a lot of people, unless they work like with FQHCs or with like, you know, other kind of community-based healthcare systems, I don't really think they thought about, you know, they didn't really consider it as, I mean, obviously it's important, but like you said, for those demographics, you know, for like those, you know, the quote unquote vulnerable demographics. But I love that you said, well, why can't we expand this to be beyond that? And I think that that's like a huge, like, yes, obviously, like that is kind of the point. And it's like, if we ever want to close gaps, like as a society, as a nation, we need to address everybody, you know, not just people who, you know, stereotypically may need it more. I think another thing that I want to comment on is, you're right, it's so much more like the CHW role. It is about, you know, connecting people to resources and calling and saying, oh, here's the number to, you know, paratransit or, you know, the other whatever. A lot of it is you are positioned in a place that you are able to help reinstall trust within the healthcare system, mm-hmm. for the people that you're working. Like, that's the largest part about it. It's like, for so many people, the healthcare system is elitist, and it has a history of racism and discrimination, and it's just not a trustworthy, you know, system for many people. Not only that, it's very scary. It's very complicated to navigate, especially when it comes to insurance and, you know, all of those just very complicated things for the average person. Like, those are just things that some people would rather just not deal with. So as a CHW, you're really positioned in a place where you can help bring clarity to that in a culturally relevant context. That to me was, I think, my favorite part about it. It's like, I know that historically there is an issue here. There's something that, you know, needs to be addressed, a problem. And that even if I'm just doing one small little part to help, you know, address that, I'm still doing something. So I think that that's kind of the bigger picture of it. And moving forward, you know, like you mentioned in the beginning, like there's a whole bunch of just different like socio and political like themes that are being addressed in general right now. And it's so unique to see how CHWs really can draw a lot of that together and be like the combining force for all of that.
That's what I was envisioning as you were speaking. I was seeing all this new energy coming together, coalescing, and just becoming a wave that changes so much. Mm-hmm. You know, Tiffany, this was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Dan. And I really appreciate the work that you've done in the past, the work that you continue to do, and I'm excited to see the work you'll do in the future.
The feeling is mutual.
Thank you.
Take care. Mm-hmm.